mein auf den Supercast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 372. I'm Adam and die. I bring Sutek's gift of death to all humanity. And here's Kobe Bartlett Sloan.
Egyptian mummies building rockets? That's crazy.
Debbie Melrose.
Doctor, listen, I saw a mummy. A walking mummy.
And Mary Lang.
Oh, noble God, your servant hears you.
Yes, today we're here to review the Pyramids of Mars.
Again.
Yay. Again.
Again.
Don't sound so bored about it, because it's a very good show. Right, so...
It's wonderful.
Yes, hang on, I'm just adjusting my microphone. That's better.
It's just my habit to watch things over and over again.
It's not your habit, did you say?
No, it's not.
That's what happens when you become a Doctor Who fan. You tend to watch things over and over again, usually in 10-year cycles, funny enough.
Yes.
So this will probably be my last go at it. All right, so the Pyramids of Mars starts with a title sequence followed by a sort of Egyptian scene, which is enhanced by some stock footage of some pyramids and then some Egyptian stuff by some pyramids and then some studio stuff of Professor Scarman, I believe that is, gaining access to a untouched tomb and then finding the Eye of Horus. The door opens and then he goes Meanwhile on the TARDIS,
it's lit all in green
in the TARDIS, sorry. The Doctor is a bit sulky and Sarah comes out of into the TARDIS via the interior doors dressed in sort of Victorian garb, and the Doctor calls her Vicky and then changes it to Victoria. So there's a bit of confusion going on there.
I love the interaction there when he's just all sulky and she's putting the little scarf over her head and
yes.
I walk in eternity.
I'm a Time Lord. Oh, I know you're a Time Lord.
Oh, yes. Ooh, serious.
Master?
Yes?
This is the last time we will see the control room for 11 stories.
Really?
Oh,
yep.
Marvellous.
Right.
Okay, anyway, well, that's, that gives them time to rebuild it, because it wasn't very good. So, the TARDIS does a bit of a wobble, and Sarah sees the face of, I suppose, Sutek in the corner, and gets a bit freaked out about it. So they're actually heading for Unit HQ. They manage to make it to
Unit... They make it to the right location.
Unfortunately, a bit earlier than planned. And there's loads of sarcophagi, and... a man with a fez, rather appropriately.
Fezes are cool.
Playing some spooky organ music, which I don't know if it would have been actually written, this particular piece, way back in those days. Yes?
I love the fact that they were playing the music at the time, the recording, and it's causing that mirror to vibrate.
Oh, okay.
It's just this extra little touch, which is perfect.
Yeah, but it was the actor himself playing it, or was it just being played somewhat?
No, it's no. You watch the actor's hands. His hands never move while this music is playing on and on. So,
but they've at least they've put a speaker or something close to that mirror.
Oh, did they? Okay. Or maybe it was just attention to detail. What was good was the fact that the camera was zoomed into the sarcophagus. In the mirror and zoomed out to you know, see the chap at the organ, and then there was some interaction between him and Professor Scarman's friend, whose name escapes me for the moment. And he was quite moody, this Fez bloke, wasn't he? He just didn't want to be disturbed. Pardon, Debbie?
Wasn't it Professor Warlock?
That's the one.
Professor Warlock.
Well done.
Ding.
The butler is sort of listening at the keyhole, and then the Doctor turns up with Sarah, and they climb out of the window.
Onto Mick Jagger's estate.
Onto Mick Jagger's estate. And then they peek through a window.
You can drive over there to and look through the bars of the of the gate.
And get arrested for trespassing. Yes, indeed, Kirby.
And as I understand it, I was trying to confirm this. I think there's confirmation in the little video on the DVD. But, you know, they gave the rocket, the pyramid rocket, to the school right outside.
Okay.
And in the Oh Mummy extra on the DVD, you can still see it. But I was checking Google Maps and couldn't find it.
Thank you, Kirby. Right, the butler gets killed very quickly. He's not very. He didn't last very long into the story, and then some mummies are released from the sarcophagi in the cupboard. Warlock is also shot. I forgot to mention this, and gets escorted by the Doctor and Sarah into a safe place, while also being followed by the mummies. And then I think the fezzed bloke gets a summons back to the house. And meanwhile...
It's Namin. His name is Namin.
You know Abraham? What? Yeah, Namin.
Namin.
Namin. N-A-M-I-N.
Namin. Deb, have a word with him. Anyway, so the Doctor and Sarah meet up with Mr. Bronson. I mean Michael Sheard, who used to live on the Isle of Wight. And
who?
It was Professor Scarman's brother, Michael Sheard.
Oh.
He used to live there?
Cool.
Yes, he lived and died here on the Isle of Wight. Even when he was actually actively working as an actor. Actively working as an actor. I'm doing so well today. meanwhile,
he's an actor.
He sort of invented some piece of kit. Is it for communicating with Mars or something like that?
It's a radio telescope.
Yeah, radio telescope, but he's pointing it at Mars, is he not?
Correct.
Oh, you got yourself out of that one. Anyway, right, so he shows the Doctor...
What do you mean?
Never mind. It shows the Doctor his piece of kit, but the Doctor sort of...
Well, I haven't lost any points yet.
The Doctor trumps him... The Doctor trumps him because he's got a smaller version of the same gadget in his pocket. So anyway, the Doctor heads back to the house, and Namin kneels in front of what?
N-A-M-I-N, Namin.
I think he's confusing it with his first name, which is Ibrahim.
Namin. Anyway, he kneels in front of the sarcophagus while something in disco lights eventually. Travels and lands. What was really cool about him landing in the room was that every footstep had that smoke coming out.
I love that.
It was really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And he sort of said that he was the servant of Sutek, and of course I am the servant of Sutek. He needs no other. I just love the way he spoke. It was beautiful. And of course, even when he kills him. But yes?
You know what all the smoke is coming from.
No, I'm sure you're going to tell me.
I mean, in story-wise, it's very hard to spot it later on when the Doctor is interacting with the portal there. Mm. Apparently, to go through that time-space corridor, things get very hot. It's heat.
Okay, Kirby, that's fascinating.
You can see the heat coming off of that when they get the coordinates from Sutek later.
Okay, thank you. Right then, so I do
love... I just thought everything came packed in dry ice.
Yeah.
Of course.
Hang on, I just want to say my favourite bit, is it?
I bring Sutek's gift of death to all humans.
My favourite bit of all. Not the fact he died, but just that delivery of...
He's got a very nice death scream.
As he now.
Yeah, nice and pained, isn't it?
Yeah, the very end has the little...
Anyway, so, yeah, of course, the other Scarman sees the appearance of his now dead brother in the sort of cadaver of Sutek... The servant of Sutek. And the Doctor's quite fascinated by this thing, and he nearly gets... sort of sucked into the sort of time corridor thing and then throws something into it. What does he throw into it to stop it from...
He uses the TARDIS key.
Oh, right, yeah, just to sort of knock it out of alignment, but it does rather knock him out as well. Meanwhile, there's a yes. poacher, a traditional poacher, rather like the poacher from Spearhead from Space, probably wearing exactly the same costume. And he's also one of the, the regular stuntmen on Doctor Who as well, the chap who plays the poacher. We might not be. Because he's watching one of the mummies who's got trapped in one of his poaching traps, just easily ease his foot out of it. The Doctor eventually wakes up, and there's a great scene in which the poacher just runs into the invisible wall. That's right.
And it's very clever how they did that. Do you know how they did that?
No.
They had him just running, and then they cut the... this is on film, obviously.
Yes.
They cut the film suddenly, and then had the quick cut to where he falls backwards. So it looks like he ran into it and fell backwards.
Oh.
But it's because that quick cut
yes.
makes it look like he hit it.
Okay. Anyway, so...
It's wonderful.
It's wonderful, yes. That chap that... a warlock, that's right. He sort of has a chat with the Scarman cadaver thing and then gets...
Oh, they put a stick on... They put a string on the stick that the poacher... throws. That's how that bounces back.
Okay. But doesn't also then Warlock get done in finally by one of the mummies? The Doctor sort of comes around and they drag eventually, they get that carcass out of here. They drag
yes.
Namine's carcass away, and as they called it.
And they hide in the priest hole.
Yeah, I was going to say there are lots of secret passages in this house. Why would they?
The priest hole should not be as the Doctor refers to it. It should not be there in this style of house. It was just kind of put in there.
It might have just been put in there for sort of throwback reasons. Anyway,
Did you start the feed?
Yes.
I missed that.
Tough. Anyway, right, so the mummies, meanwhile, are sort of carrying bits of kit around the house. And to get out of the situation, the Doctor invites the new companion into the TARDIS. That would be Scarman Jr., whose name was... We've gone quiet again.
Lawrence.
Morris.
Huh?
Anyway, yes,
Lawrence
young Scarman the Younger, who has also been allowed to have a poke around the TARDIS corridors and stuff. Sarah decides, oh, we're in the TARDIS now, we can leave, can't we? The Doctor's like, okay, let's see what it's going to look like if we leave now. And, of course, they open the doors up.
Yeah, let's go and have a quick squiz of the future, yeah.
But, of course, because they've travelled in the TARDIS, it means that Scarman is now a companion.
Oh. Yes, of course. Yes.
Oh, okay.
If that's the definition, then yes.
Yeah, indeedy. So we forgot about him, didn't we?
I was trying to look up what other stories he was in, see if he's traveling the TARDIS more than once.
Were you talking about the actor?
Yeah.
I don't think he was in any more that he traveled in the TARDIS.
He's, Michael Sheard has been in The Ark,
yes.
Mind of Evil,
yes.
Pyramids of Mars,
yes.
Invisible Enemy,
yes.
Of course, Castrovalva,
yes.
Remembrance of the Daleks.
Yes. He didn't travel in the TARDIS in any of those other stories.
No.
So anyway, the poacher's being chased by the mummies and eventually gets killed by them in a very gruesome way.
my girls are extremely amused by the killing by the boob mummies.
Yeah.
The boob mummies,
Crushed by the boobs, yeah.
I remember us talking about that last time.
Now, despite being advanced...
You know, they made that scene up while they were filming. It was not scripted.
Okay.
They need to figure out, okay, how are we going to kill him? And so the actors all came up with that.
They needed to figure out how they were going to kill him. Surely that would have been in the script somewhere.
No, it's just said he's killed by the mummies. Probably they were going to do something like have him strangled.
Yeah, that's how they kill everybody else.
Of course, yes. Well, it would have made sense, wouldn't it? Anyway, the Doctor is constantly trying to convince Morris Scarman that his brother doesn't exist anymore.
Why
but
do you keep saying Morris?
What do you? Well, how do you call it then?
Maurice.
Morrence.
Morris. M-A-U-R-I-C. Debbie, how do you spell Morris? How do you pronounce Morris?
Maurice.
Where are you getting Morris?
Yeah, it's Maurice. Marcus, isn't it?
It's Marcus and
Marcus. Marcus. Yeah. Why do you say Morris then? Yes, silly man, right.
That's I've never said Morris.
Well, I said, what's Scarman Younger called? I said, and you said
there's
Morris.
There's two Scarmans. There's Marcus, who is dead.
So where did you get Morris from then? When I asked what's Scarman Younger called, hang on, I said, what's Scarman Younger called? You said Morris. So?
He said Lawrence.
I said Lawrence.
Well, he didn't say it very clearly. So therefore, I now look stupid because I've been calling him Morris the whole thing. So,
and I kept asking you, why are you doing that?
Yeah, that's what confused me. Because after you told me he was called Morris, or at least it sounded like that, then I called him Morris, when in fact his name was Lawrence. So, for you.
For I get it right.
Quite clearly trying to make me look sillier than I actually look. Lawrence is constantly sort of being told by the doctor that his brother is dead. And then there's a ridiculous scene. There's a ridiculous scene at the end of episode two. The only ridiculous scene in the whole of the story, to be said, the bit where Sarah gets grabbed at the neck by the mummy, and then is just sort of there wriggling her head around, looking really scared for about 5 minutes before the titles finally come in. That's the only rubbish scene of the whole story. I'm just going to check me. Laurie Nix says Morris the, and then she says Lawrence. Cheers, Laurie. anyway, right. So moving on.
Did you see the video that Laurie posted shortly before we started, where she's levitating TARDIS keys around her office?
I saw something of that. I didn't have got time to watch the whole thing, but I did see something of that. Yes. Anyway, so Sarah, meanwhile, she nearly gets throttled, but in the scene in the next episode, it's a lot shorter. And there's a bit of a scrap going on between Sarah and a mummy, the doctor lying on the ground, and the doctor's rigged up some gadget that Sarah can press to sort of disable the mummy.
The doctor tells her to use the Namin's ring, which
is a gadget.
Namin's dead body.
Which is a gadget, which he's rigged up for her to use.
Yes.
Pardon?
To get the mummy to leave?
Now, do you realise what happened there?
No.
Instead of pressing...
Did you press the button?
I actually pressed... So because you made me do that, Kirby...
That's my theme song.
Right. Right, so there's the Doctor and Sarah, meanwhile, creating the most annoying, for me... continuity issue for the whole story when they go outside to sort of observe the spaceship and the mummies and stuff like that, and then when he comes in to tell Sarah to unwrap the bindings of the mummy, his hat's not on him, and then he goes back out again and his hat's back on again.
Oh,
but Lawrence will not have it.
I never saw that.
Well, come on, I moaned about it last time we watched this story. But Lawrence keeps on going on about his brother and stuff like that. He just will not have it.
My poor brother. Yeah.
The doctor, meanwhile, has come up with this idea of blowing up the spaceship. And
Master?
Yes?
May I make a comment about the perimeter jars that keep the...
You can, but my...
I love the fact that they are almost perfect models of real canopic jars. And each one has a different head corresponding to the way that the four canopic jars of a mummy would have, like the jackal head, etc.
Yeah.
You know, those are used for the preserved internal organs of the mummies.
Okay, thank you.
And instead these have vacuum thermos jars inside.
Okay. Yeah, anyway, so Sarah and the doctor find the poacher's hut, which still has rotting corpses of various animals hanging around it. Scarman eventually takes all the mummy's bindings off, and the funny scene in here is when Sarah finds what she was looking for, and I'm going to play it, actually, because it's so funny. Here we go. Here we go.
This looks like it. Oh, what's the matter? Not enough?
Sweaty gelignite is highly unstable.
I'm no expert, but I believe that gelignite is actually not
right. Sweat. Completely ruined the fun of that scene.
No, it's still a fun scene.
Good grief.
Besides, that's my job.
Yeah, whatever. Right, so anyway, and the fact that the doctor eventually looks up and gives Sarah a dirty look for doing it also made me laugh.
Yes.
And then the two brothers are lovingly reunited prior to, obviously, Marcus killing Lawrence a little bit later. The doctor, meanwhile, yes. creeps around...
Brother?
Yes. The doctor, meanwhile, creeps around... ready to hide his bomb, and then with his hat on, and then comes back in again with his hat off to find the dead body.
Now you've now made this to be much more entertaining, more almost as entertaining as the cushion being held down by the stagehand.
Well, this is much more glaring for me.
I never noticed that before.
Oh, come on! It's bloody. He's there with the hat. He hides the thing. And not only does he come in with his hat off and his hair's done, it's a bit like John Pertwee always did. He said, come in from outside scenes with his hair pristine and go back out again and his hair was all over the place. Sarah's rather disgusted by the murder, the brother murder. What they call it when you murder your brother, there's a word for it, isn't there?
Fratricide.
That's it, yeah. The doctor, meanwhile, gets himself dressed up as a... Sorry, helps get Sarah, helps him dress up as a mummy. And
how does he? I guess they remove the internal bits from that exoskeleton, and he fits in there somehow.
Yes, Kirby. Obviously. Anyway, Sutek meanwhile sends Scarman a smoking thing, and the doctor meanwhile
coordinates for the pyramid, which is holding him.
Horus is
locked for years.
Yeah, Horus has imprisoned him, and that's what Horus imprisoned Sutek, and he sent the coordinates for the spaceship to fly to Mars, I would presume, to release him.
Right. Yeah, but what I was trying to point out for years and years and years, I thought that Sutek was on Mars. Sutek is not on Mars. Sutek is in Egypt. The
pyramids on Mars.
Beam holding him is the whole business from that last episode. All that complex is on Mars.
Okay.
But Sutek himself is not on Mars.
Okay. Thank you for that. Right. So anyway, the mummies are sort of rushing around sorting out the spaceship, and the doctor has placed the explosive device on the edge of the spaceship, and all Sarah has to do, being the marksman that she is shoot it to set it off.
Of course. Why would she not be a marksman? She's been hanging out with
unit, whatever. Anyway, she does shoot it, and nothing much happens. A flame comes out and goes back in again because Sutek is using his powers to prevent it from going off. So the doctor rushes to the house and flies down the sort of space time corridor thingamajig and goes in to have
exactly
a chat with.
Fly, does he? Just sort of stand.
All right, he stands. Yeah, but he he goes in to have a bit of a chat with his old mate Sutek, and of course as soon as he says hello to him, the thing distracts him, and the spaceship blows up, which and then we see a load of teeth and a load of like Kirby says. Of course, it's the same actor that played the voice for Omega and played the voice for the Satan in Satan's Pit, because of course you would not have known that, would you?
Yes, I've known that for a long time.
You couldn't resist it. You've known that for ages. You couldn't resist that at all, could you? And I knew you wouldn't be able to resist it. I mean, like 5 viewers, what's going on? Right then, now, Alan T. Butcher says fracticide. There you go, didn't know that either, did you? And then Laurie Nick said cat.
That's because she's trying to tell you that she was Morris earlier saying Morris the cat.
Oh, sorry, Laurie. Sorry, Laurie. I'm a poet and didn't know it. Anyway, right, so after inflicting some pain on the doctor, which very amusing scenes anyway, there's also a scene in which he forces the doctor to kneel, which reminded me a little bit of the scene in The Planet of Spiders when the Great One makes the Third Doctor kneel and he refuses to do it. It's a similar sort of setup. And of course, there was a little bit of a harking back to the planet of the Dalek. No, not a planet. What's the other one where they had the Exelon City? What was that one called?
Death to the Daleks.
No, that wasn't that one. That was the one before that one. Anyway,
yeah, Death to the Daleks.
Okay, yeah, sorry, Mary. Exelon yeah, Death to the Daleks. Yeah, so there was a reference to that as well. So anyway, the Doctor gets taken out. Oh, nearly. Yes?
Gabriel Wolf was not Omega.
Okay, sorry about that.
Omega was played
determined to make me look stupid tonight,
Stephen Moore.
Right. You're right, of course, but as you determined to make me look stupid, I thought it was definitely worth
a dip. I'm the pedantic one, remember?
How can you not remember? It's working against me at the moment. Anyway, right. The TARDIS key is sent back down the thingamajig into Marcus's hands. I forgot his name for a minute. And the Doctor is taken over by Sutek and is possessed. His way of showing being possessed is looking up to the ceiling for most of the time and sweating a little bit. They go to the TARDIS. So essentially, Sutek is now a companion because he's now in the TARDIS in the Doctor's body. And so is Marcus Garman, and so is one of the mummies as they fly off to Mars. To go through the Exelon City once again. The Doctor, of course, there's a funny scene where he's the time will destroy him, and he sort of gets throttled for about 3 seconds, and his respiratory bypass system helps him out again. And then the...
Master?
Yes?
Yes, Sarah Jane mentions that the whole thing reminds her of the Exelon City. Even though she was there in that story, she did not go into the Exelon City.
Yeah, but maybe the Doctor told her about the Exelon City.
Probably.
Well, I expect they've probably had the odd conversation here and there in their time together about adventures.
And I remember the last time I saw this, I had no idea what the Exelon City was because I had not seen that story.
Anyway, so they both sort of go through the various puzzles and various corridors to get themselves through to a certain one, which ended up with Sarah being imprisoned by a dirty tube. Now, what annoyed me about the dirty tube, and it was only dirty so the Doctor could write relax backwards on it, is the fact that one of the close-up scenes of the two buttons, there's some very badly stuck-on gaffer tape.
Yes.
which really stuck out like a sore thumb.
It's galactic gaffer tape.
But the good thing was, of course, that the little... What would you call it? The puzzle the Doctor had to do to get himself out of the situation was quite clever.
Which one?
The one with if you are the one that was lying, then.
Now you know what I'm talking about. Because the one puzzle where he uses his scarf with all the measurement and everything it's glaringly obvious if you just look at the two patterns, which one square is different without measuring it with your scarf.
Oh, okay. Laurie Nick says dirty tube. She didn't put a question mark after it, so she knows what I'm talking about. And Anthony Butcher said the Third Doctor was John, not Neil. Eh?
Did somebody call him Neil?
No, I suppose because I said the Great One made him Neil.
Oh, Neil. Okay.
Made the Third Doctor Neil.
Okay.
He's being clever, unlike Kirby. Right then. So yeah, the Doctor works it out.
Alan or Laurie, come on, back me up.
The Doctor releases Sarah, being clever, and then the little orange egg thing, which was the thing holding Sutek in place, gets destroyed, and then. Marcus's body is destroyed, and all the corridors open, and Sutex celebrating as he's free. But the Doctor realizes
it's hard to tell when Marcus's face lights up and says, "Oh, I'm free," whether it's Sutex being free or whether it's Marcus at last being, you know, like his body is free of the possession, and now he can.
Well,
I thought it was the free of the possession thing.
Could be. Doesn't matter though. He's dead within seconds.
I thought it was the other way because Marcus, for all intents and purposes, has been dead all along. It was just a walking Sutex, sort of.
I know, but like, what is it? Like vampires, you know, you're dead, but you're alive. You know, your soul is still trapped somewhere.
Yeah, well, either way, it didn't matter because he was dead within seconds. And the Doctor realizes there's a time factor, so rushes back to Earth, and then it takes the time controller out of the TARDIS and essentially ages Sutek to death. So essentially murders Sutek.
Oh, but I already alluded to it earlier, but remember, there's the famous hand holding Sutek's pillow.
Yeah, well, no, I glossed over that bit.
I recall, one of you guys had never seen that last time.
I hadn't seen it. I hadn't seen it until you pointed it out.
I hadn't seen it before. Yeah.
Yeah.
But since you had pointed it out the last time we talked about it, then
can't help but see it.
Yeah, now I see it.
Right, so Pyramids of Mars. What can I say about Pyramids of Mars apart from its brilliance? Obviously, I've picked out the only things that are wrong with it are continuity things. That's production things. It doesn't detract from the story or anything like that. I haven't been able to fault anything of the story itself, just certain quirky things that you notice after watching it a few times. It is annoying to me more, and because it's so blatantly obvious about the hat continuity thing. There's probably, if you look a bit closer, a few other continuity issues.
I disagree with you because I never noticed it before.
Well, I never noticed the cushion thing before.
Right.
So it's just one of those things. You'll always notice it. And for me, it's more glaring than it is that this cushion thing. So cushion thing's quite subtle. It's funny, but it's subtle. But I don't want to talk about the continuity issues. All I want to talk about is it as a story, the way it was acted, directed. It's just brilliant. It's such a really good tale. It's a classic, and I'll never get bored of this one. There are the Doctor Who stories that I may have liked at the start and then, you know, got bored or fed up with them, but this is not one of them. I can never get fed up with this story. It's got also one of my favourite scenes during the Exelon City bit, when there's a mummy sort of standing guard and the Doctor and Sarah walk in, see it and walk out very quickly. I know they worked out that scene on set, but it just shows the sort of rapport between Tom Baker and Elizabeth Sladen. Absolute fantastic. It's one of the best Doctor Who stories ever. What do you think of it, Kirby?
Absolutely love it. I completely agree with everything you said, except I'm not bothered by the continuity errors.
I'm not bothered by them that much, but that's the only thing I can find wrong with it.
I'm not bothered by them at all, to the point where I never even noticed the hat business.
Mm.
And I'm just... I am amused by the hand, that's all. I loved it in the DVD extra called Oh Mummy, where they make fun of the hand. Because you see, I think Laurie posted a YouTube video of it, if one doesn't have the DVD. But it's Sutek in his everyday life after the story. But anyway, it's a perfect story. I can watch it over and over again. It was one of the first DVDs I ever bought. Of course, I got Sarah Jane stories before anything else anyway.
Mm.
And I can just, if I feel like watching a Doctor Who, it's one that I pull down and I'll watch it all the way through many times. I've watched it 3 times this past week.
Wow, that's quite impressive.
And oddly enough, this time I did not watch it with any of the info text or the commentary.
Good.
These were just
unusual for you.
Four times through, straight.
Well, there you go. Is that it, Kirby?
Yes.
Yes, I agree. I agree with you, by the way. Debbie, had you seen this story before?
Yes, I have. I watched it, one of the first ones that I watched when I joined the podcast, I think.
Okay.
And absolutely love it. I loved it then, loved it now. It was great to come back to it. I've watched it twice this week and just... yeah, it's just brilliant, definitive Doctor Who, and you've got silly things like the hand and things like that, and the boob crushing of the mummy. That is still absolutely brilliant.
And this is,
I am more than happy for Isla to watch as well. And, you know, she didn't watch it this time round because she was busy doing other things this week. But she wants to, because she's fascinated by the fact that I was laughing quite a lot through this one. But, you know, she was like, is it a really funny one? I was like, I don't think it's intentionally funny, but, you know, it has its moments. And that's what I love about Doctor Who. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it.
No, excellent. Right then, stand by, everybody. Miss Mary.
Well, I do have to say that this is a wonderful episode. yes.
Yay!
There's much to it to like. I thought you were playing music.
I was.
What I like about it is how many times the author's given us misdirections. One of them is we think that the organ playing, is it Namin? With Fez on and all. I mean, we think, ooh, he's the evil guy, you know, because he's just like, ooh, he's kind of scary right from the beginning, and his organ playing, and but then boom, he dies. So it's like, oh, okay, he's not the evil guy. And when that black creature comes out of the sarcophagus, we go, ooh, this must be Sutek, you know. Well, no, it's not Sutek. It's Marcus, you know. I'm like, oh, okay. So we keep being surprised by what the author puts out there, including taking advantage of an age-old thing where Lawrence, trying to show even like a picture of him and Marcus as brothers, and appealing to that little piece inside of him that is still, you know, possibly human and will respond. And we've seen that in how many shows where, oh, yeah, you know, you do make touch and, okay, this person's going to be on his side. Well, no, it doesn't. He turns around and he kills him. So it's like, oh, wow. So it's kind of fun being surprised by things. You know, that are set up to be one way and go another. There are some things I'm not that comfortable with. Sarah suddenly being a sharpshooter rifle person, and the doc in his mummy wraps, somehow that just was a little too perfect. You know, I wanted to see it be, you know, a little more suspicious.
You should should have wrapped a scarf around him, shouldn't they, Mary?
Oh, yeah, something.
Yeah.
Or got the bandages on quite exactly right. You know, I mean, that would have been a little more realistic. And I found that episode 4 kind of slowed things down in a way that looks like the author kind of ran out of ideas, because here we are presented again, you know, with that Exelon City set of puzzles, and I wonder, well, why would Horace set all that up? Like, who's going to try and get in there? Because Sutek is stuck to a chair, so he's not going to get in there, and he would be the only one interested in, you know, trying to get to Horace's eye. Episode 4 was a bit slow and didn't make a lot of sense to me for those reasons. And I have to confess that I believe this was the story in which I said I did not like Sarah very much, the character of Sarah, because I felt like Liz Sladen was playing her a little too confident. As we say here in the States, she was a little far over her skis on this one. Because I just felt like, you know, she's a companion and she shouldn't be quite so in charge. But now that I've seen it in succession with the other stories leading up to this, it makes perfect sense that she is the way she is.
Hey.
And I absolutely loved her in this. Yeah, so I have to take that back.
Hey.
Yay.
So naturally, so 90%, I really, really liked it. Yeah.
Well, there you go, everybody. That's a turn up for the books, isn't it? Okay, let's move on to feedback. Now, what we've got here, I'm looking at the wrong feedback. Here we are. Oh, yes, before we look at feedback from the emails, did you post any requests, by the way, Cubby?
Huh?
Did you post any?
Yeah, of course. Huh? I always do.
Hmm? Right, let's see what happened with that, then. Oh, hang on. Someone's posted a picture
of Sarah Ooh. Jane with the mummy. Says, is it a nasty accident that we're coming around in our journey to Pyramids of Mars again? Provide feedback here.
Oh, go on then. What came about from it?
A whole bunch of stuff.
Lori
says, love this one, and not just because of Vicky's dress. See full comments below. Someone named Lillian Robbins says, I've found these patterns that could be adapted for cosplay. Her outfit has elements of both. One of these days, ... I love most of Sarah's outfits, and it links to patterns. Okay.
Right.
She also says, I think I should be nicknamed Lily one of these days, Robin, because I think I've used the phrase 3 or 4 times since joining Facebook. Who is this? Okay.
Interesting sound effect, yes.
Another one from her. I'd forgotten this is one of the stories I have a target book of. I don't have that many target books, though. My little bit of feedback, Pyramids of Mars, is simply great. My prediction for the quiz winner, Debbie, you can beat Mr. Pedantic. I responded to her, so you think Debbie will win? We will see about that. I'm probably predicting her as well, as I don't get a lot of the name things she does.
I saw that.
Lori says, a priest hall in a Victorian Gothic folly? Really? Grin. My love for this episode is boundless. It is because it's the first one. Oh, she's got long feedback. It's the first one I remember seeing all the way through, or that I was dazzled by the King Tut exhibit as a girl and wanted to be an archaeologist, or that I am a card-carrying priestess of the Fellowship of Isis and have a penchant for Set. I'll never tell. Really, it's all about the relationship between the Doctor and Sarah Jane, which in this and the previous episode has come to its fruition. Just great chemistry between Baker and Sladen. Free of unit and even Harry, Sarah is now the go-to trusted and true companion to the Doctor. She acts as foil and conscious and is a surprisingly crack shot. Who knew? Baker as the Doctor continues to entertain, amuse, and provoke. He's still fresh and unpredictable. Delicious. The location shots are lovely. The acting appropriately melodramatic. The story is a great mix of genres. Well-written, though not without its blunders. Cue Mary. Regardless of slow-moving, top-heavy robots, a comical-looking death of a poacher, silly special effects, mythological inaccuracies, Sutekh the Destroyer is more than a worthy adversary and played with finesse rather than overwroughtness. All in all, an extremely gratifying rewatch. And Joshua Dyball says, another story which scared the hell out of me when I was a little kid. Particularly hated the mummy's yellow stained bandages. Looked very authentic. Great story, this one. Yeah, I can hear his. Never mind. Is Joshua, is he Australian?
No.
No, okay. I'm thinking of Billy.
Yes.
I was reading it in my head as Billy's accent.
Billy's accent is Yorkshire.
Okay.
Yeah, really. He's not native Australian.
He's essentially a naturalized Australian, but he just talks with a North Yorkshire accent. Yeah. Yes.
And Lori also posted a picture of her levitating a TARDIS key, like I said before.
Yes. Was that it?
And she also said, now you all know where I'm held captive on Sundays. Jeff says, look out for Clara's hand on your chair when you sit down. Lori says, and here I was scolding the janitor for his impudence.
Yeah.
That's all of that feedback. Where is Captain Kirk's?
Oh, right. For God's sake.
Well, usually he posts it in print as well.
Yeah, he says.
Right.
Yeah.
Moving on, Jeff Waddle says, my third most watched DVD of Classic Who, after Talons of Weng Chiang and Seeds of Doom.
Seeds of Doom
great.
Must be interesting. I've
Cheers.
Never seen it.
What else we got here?
Or am I mixing things up again?
Yeah, I don't like the fact that there's Seeds of Doom and Seeds of Death. Really irritates me. Tom Baker story.
Right, I've not seen that one. No. I know we're about to see it, but I've not seen it.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Fantasy Big Black Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. Pyramids of Mars by Stephen Harris. Sutek creates a barrier around the house that turns people into mimes. There's a pyramid in Egypt count as a pyramid of Mars? The plural, pyramids, is used in the title, and there is only one on Mars. A predestined fire was later used in the story Ghostlight, where Ace remembered an old building burning down. Egyptian gods being powerful aliens was later used as the basis of Stargate, as I said last time we reviewed this. The doctor seems less pleasant in this, more grumpy.
Yes, because he's worried.
Tom Baker being self-obsessed.
No, he's just worried about the whole situation.
Now.
Thank you, Ian. Yeah, it's another thing. We didn't really allude to that. He was a bit moody and grumpy with Sarah, but I think it's because he knew that the world was in peril, and that's what was he was really taking the situation quite seriously.
Oh, in peril? I don't want to go abroad.
What? I have a question.
Yes, dear.
Is this the first time that we see that, you know, that the doctor takes his companion into the future to show, you know, how horrible the world can be if he doesn't take action?
Yeah, I think so, because it was the first time he had...
Again, but I'm thinking it happens in like, New Who, but
it might
I think
do.
This is the first time
in... It probably does, but yes, because this is the first time, really, that and that he's done it since he's had control of the TARDIS. Obviously, before, during the Pertwee era, he really didn't have that much control of it, and he's got a bit more control, and very precise control at this particular period, just before it goes back to its normal...
Yeah, he can actually take it where he wants it at the moment, which is a bit of a shock.
Yeah.
Anyway, finally, in regards to feedback, I have asked Alan who he'd like to dictate his Bible of feedback, and he has indeed spoke.
You were writing to me at one point about a few minutes ago, but
did you? That's good then.
Oh, it's just come up.
That's what she said. And the way she said it as well. Oh, it's just come up.
No, it hasn't. What's going
yes, it
on?
Has.
There it is.
It's not a pantomime, you know.
I love you too, Alan. You know that, don't you? Oh, God. I'm going to mess this up so bad.
Is it closely studied?
You know, he just appreciates a, you know, like a native girl doing the reading.
It's the comedy value, I think.
Yes, yeah.
Death to the Venn diagrams. Set theory. Near 20 megabytes. Pyramids of Mars is, of course, a closely studied examination of penal ethics and finely balanced questions of the moral content of death, entrapment of evil, cruel and unreasonable punishment, and the responsible release of the incarcerated from a correctional facility. Obviously, Sutek is a bad person, but were those that imprisoned him in solitary and static confinement any better? Clearly, we must doubt it. Also, as a bringer of death, are we to conclude that Sutek entirely evil when his gift is perhaps to some a welcome release? The fratricidal scenario adds to this aspect of the story. Sutek's eventual release after being lent a hand by a cushion is facilitated by the doctor to provide an example of such a welcome release. By the end, you may wonder what exactly was the point. The point is, of course, the bit at the top of the pyramid. It should be noted that although some might suggest that the puzzle sequence belatantly plagiarising the similar one in Death to the Daleks, which plagiarised old Doctor Who annual features, is rubbish, well, actually, they would be quite right. We also learn that Lawrence Scarman did in fact survive to later become headmaster of Coal Hill before being demoted due to a nasty incident with a Dalek in the staircase and joining Grange Hill instead. In fact, some believe he was the original impossible girl before Clara, constantly popping up in different forms throughout the Doctor's lives. All in all, Pyramids of Mars is a slightly overrated classic.
No.
Its high quality stems from an outstanding cast in a time of generally excellent casts, with a special mention to Gabriel Wolfe's vocal talent. The plot is, however, somewhat strangulated and confusing, but it's all carried off with some panache, so you don't really mind. It is perhaps 20 minutes too long due to some dreadful puzzles we've done without. Next up, Doctor Who and the unfeasibly overblown exercise in preparation for an invasion, or you kept that eye patch for how long? Those are my happy
people.
Yay!
That's all
Kirby's objecting. Kirby's objecting.
Yeah, I'm this is one of the first times Alan and I have disagreed. I don't think that it's 20 minutes too long.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with him. Yeah, that whole fourth episode is kind of a waste.
Laurie Nix.
It's a bit of a factor, but I enjoyed that.
Laurie Nix says Marcus only gets to wear his cool Osirian outfit once. Oh, I've got a bading. Let's see if that's anything interesting.
Well done, you.
Yeah, perfectly placed.
That's to do with weddings. I'll look at that later. But I don't like it when people who suddenly post with me change of plan.
Master?
Yes.
Master, I was doing more research.
With of course. More research on what? What? More research on what?
On this story.
Oh, yeah.
And this was the first time that I had done any research on the guy who wrote the original draft. You know, it was written by both Robert Holmes and this guy, Lewis Greifer.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to use a pseudonym.
Mm-hmm.
But he also wrote sketches for my favorite 1950s radio show, The Goon Show.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
And he wrote a prisoner episode, The General.
Oh. Anyway, Laurie Nix says it's not overrated.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, right. He was alluding to something that made me think about something. Actually, where am I? Blah, blah, blah. Oh, yes, about Gabriel Wolf's vocal talent. I thought not only his vocal talent was particular, that the actor that played Marcus Scarman, his voice was really, really, really good in this. I really enjoyed it. The way he talks and he says, "I am the servant of Sutek. He needs no other." Just before he goes, I just loved
yes,
his voice
great.
Immensely.
What else has he been in?
Don't know. Quite a lot of things. So talking about what else has he been in, I was watching, because we're currently watching series one of Red Dwarf at the moment, because they're on Netflix. I thought, woohoo, this is good.
I love Red Dwarf.
What did you say?
I said I love Red Dwarf.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, so, because obviously I've never hadn't had a chance to watch all the new stuff, so I thought, well, why not watch the whole lot? And even Isabella says she doesn't mind watching it while playing Monopoly as background telly. Anyway, so... But I noticed the cast on it is quite interesting anyway in Series 1. Yeah. Although I do remember watching Series 1, laughing at it, but thinking it was nowhere near as good as the rest of it. Basically because obviously Crichton's not in it. But anyway, I noticed in, I think it's Episode 4, they go into the sort of deepest depths of Red Dwarf and find a cat is dying, a very old cat.
Yeah,
and the cat old cat, I noticed, was Smythe from the War Games.
The actor
played Smythe.
Apparently, in that episode, he couldn't remember any of his lines, so they had boards all round the room for his lines on them.
Oh. I didn't know that, but anyway, I'm just saying that I just recognised him from that. And there's also some quite recognisable sort of actors in it from now, and of course the original Kachansky. Is it Kachansky, the Christine Kachansky, mm-hmm. that is love interest?
Christine Kachansky.
Originally played
and
by...
And also another person who's in those first season stories is the actor who played Rory's father. And,
yes, he is. That's right. But you interrupted what I was trying to say about Christine Kachansky, who is played by the lead singer of the Altered Images, Claire Grogan, yes, who was a big heartthrob of some of my friends when we were at school. But
Master?
Yes.
Oh. Okay, you finish.
Yes.
Bernard Archard, who played Marcus,
yes,
was also in Power of the Daleks.
Was he?
He played Bragan.
Oh.
And he's also in all kinds of other things. Emmerdale, Upstairs, Downstairs, Rumpel the Bailey, Bergerac, Avengers.
Okay, shut up.
Benjamin,
right then.
Zed Cars.
Shut up. Right. Alan T. Butcher says
Google
that...
aren't too British calling it Zed Cars.
That's what it is.
That's what it is.
Sound like a Z car. That wouldn't. That sounds stupid. It's Z car. Anyway, Alan T. Butcher says there are two excellent stories that waste pretty much an entire episode. This and Deadly Assassin, and there is Death to the Daleks, and then he says, did I ever say my brother used to edit the official Red Dwarf Smegazine?
I loved that. Oh, the Smegazine. I wish my mum hadn't got rid of all my copies. I had all of those.
Well, that should be the Smegazine should have perhaps become the Smegpast. Smegcast. I suspect there probably is a Smegcast somewhere along the time.
More than likely.
Yes, indeed. Right then, now it's time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One.
I will.
Right, Mary, who do you think is going to win?
Debbie's going to win and I'm going to lose.
Okay. Such confidence. Oh dear, what's happened there?
No, it's confidence.
All right, Kirby, who do you think is going to win?
Debbie's going to win, Mary's going to lose.
Yay.
Copycat.
We have a pattern here.
Yeah. Debbie, who's going to win?
Kirby's going to win, Mary's going to lose. Sorry, Mary.
No apologies needed.
It would be funny if you...
Some things in life need to remain constant, you know?
you could make out... Mary, that you've only finished last, so you can be guaranteed double points by the fact that you're going to finish last, if you know what I mean. Right then, so the current scores are, before we ask any questions, in last place with minus 3 points, it's Kirby. In second place with no points... it's Debbie, and then the lead with 1 point, it's Mary. Right, so the first question goes to...
I didn't hear you actually say I was losing points.
Oh, I heard.
You don't listen very well, do you, Kirby?
You're too busy talking.
Yes. Another point for Mary. Excellent, right. So the first question goes to Mary.
I've hit you, jokers.
Yes, all right. What is the title of the story?
I know.
We're going to set this up so that Mary absolutely wins at least once.
Yeah, Mary, what is the title of the story?
Hey, that's my question.
Yes, it is your question. What is it?
I'll play my jokers. Yep. Pyramids of Mars.
I can only ask what's in front of me.
Yeah. No, the point is that a lot of people call it the Pyramids of Mars.
Yes, they do, don't they?
There's no the.
Yeah, that was what the question was.
Oh, so if I had said the, then I would have gotten it wrong.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Right then. Kirby, who wrote the story?
Joker.
Yeah.
I already mentioned earlier, but you're probably asking for the combined name.
Oh, just get on with it.
Stephen Harris.
Oh, dear.
Yay.
Right, so how do you spell Stephen in that particular
feature? R-S-B-E-R-T.
What? S-T-E-P-H-E-N.
Nope. We've got an extra point for that. It's S-T-E-V-E-N.
S-T-E-V-E-N.
Bad luck. No, he said it right, Adam.
I said it right.
I can't hear because Debbie was talking all over you. I couldn't hear you. So for Debbie, for talking all over you, it's... and you've already got the points anyway, Kirby, so I'm not going to give any more. Right.
Oh, but you were going to give me one if I'd gotten...
That's what she said.
If you'd heard me properly in the first place.
No, I wasn't. I was just curious to see if we could spell it right. It's not one of the questions. It's just... right, Debbie.
Yeah?
What were still sealed... in the tomb, according to Scarman, what were still...
I know.
Yeah, what was still sealed in the tomb, according to Scarman?
Joker, reliquaries, or whatever they're called.
Reliquaries.
Reliquaries, yeah.
Yeah, what you just said, yes. Right then, so no points in the bonus pot, moving straight round to Mary.
Ooh, that was quick.
That's what she said. Oh dear, right then, Mary, when did the tomb date back to?
I know.
Oh darn.
I know.
I know first.
I know.
Okay, I don't know.
Kirby knows, apparently.
The first dynasty or dynasty of the pharaohs.
Wow, that was resonant.
Was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What? That's because the mouse cable's caught underneath it, so I'm going to leave it there because it sounded really good. Right, Kirby.
Master?
When Sarah comes out of the wardrobe room, what does the doctor call her?
Vicky.
Right then, Debbie.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. Did you get your joker right? I'm getting confused on when you point to it. So therefore, yes, I haven't given you enough points. Right, then you have now. Right then, Debbie.
Yeah.
How long has the doctor lived for, according, as he said in the thing? How long?
I know.
Something like 750 years.
Correct. There's a point in the bonus spot for this question. What TARDIS component failed?
I know.
Go on in, Debbie.
The relative continuum stabilizer.
Yes. Oh, hang on. My computer's gone wrong because I'm pressing the wrong buttons. Right then. The scores then at this particular stage. In last place with 4 points, Kirby. And in the lead, in the lead with 6 points each, it's Mary and Debbie. Right. Mary. Right. What was the name of the butler? Was it either... Hang on a second, Mary. Was it either Willis, Smithers, Collins or Dunton?
It was Collins.
Yay!
Right then, Kirby.
Master?
What was the name of Professor Scarman's oldest friend?
Dr. Warlock.
Debbie?
Yes?
What is the name of the man with the fez?
I know.
Ibrahim Namin.
Whoa, got it all right. I thought I was about, you were just going to say Namin. Right then. Mary.
Spoke an Egyptian, yes.
What colour ring did Namin wear?
I know.
Jeez.
Yeah, give it a chance.
My goodness. Green.
So did you like the little pause I put in there to make it sound like I was going to do it? Right then. Kirby.
Master.
What year was it at the Priory?
1911.
Debbie.
Yes.
What is Sutek better known as?
I know.
You think I'd know this one?
Beg pardon?
You think I'd know this one?
Would I?
God of Dead or something. God of the Dead.
Well, it didn't last long, did it? Right, I think Kirby said he knows.
Yes, Set.
Right, Debbie. Oh, well, that was your question, wasn't it? So, but
that
one
was
point.
My question.
Yeah, well, point in the bonus pot for this question. What did Scarman say when he kills Namin?
I know. But what? Can I say it?
No, you can't. Oh, yes, you can. Sorry, it's a bonus spot, isn't it? Go on.
It's your quote.
Yeah, go on then.
Die, I bring Sutek's gift of death to all humanity.
Oh, dear. That went a bit... Yes. Right, so the current scores in the last place with 8 points is Debbie in the lead, Mary and Kirby with 10 points each. Next person goes to Mary.
Ooh.
Mary. Mary. Mary.
Yes.
All right. What is Sutek's planet?
I know.
Planet?
Yeah, what planet does Sutek come from? What is his planet?
Earth.
And Debbie says she knows.
Phaestor Osiris.
Should get an extra point for being a smart aleck, but no, you'll just get the standard 1 point. Right, Kirby.
No, this was a planet.
Yeah, first of all. Kirby, what is the sarcophagus in actuality?
I know.
It's an entrance to a time-space tunnel.
Oh, dear. That's better. It's gone resonant again. Not resident, resonant. Right, Debbie.
Yes.
What blew up in the doctor's face? Oh dear. Sorry, yes, what blew up in the doctor's face?
I think I know.
His hanky?
Oh dear. No.
Can I try?
Yeah, I said I thought I know.
No, go on in, okay. Kirby.
Go ahead, Kirby.
I thought I heard it as parallax coil.
Heard it precisely right then, didn't you? Right.
I've seen this probably 10 or 15 times.
Have you? Okay, 2 points in the bonus pot for this question. Where in Egypt did Scarman find the tomb? Oh, deary me.
Really?
In the desert? Come on, Daddy.
I don't know.
You know all these things.
I don't usually. Sakara.
Oh my god. Oh, I pressed the wrong button. Oh my god, it's all gone all over. I nearly ended up playing iTunes then, but yes.
Wow.
Wow. Oh, did you just say, oh no? Oh, Sakara.
Yeah, I did.
Typically, yes.
Yes.
If you're like me, you never really know what it is you've written down.
No, exactly. It's like, quick! Where is it?
Right, Mary. Oh, yeah. Go on to points update first. In last place with 10 points, it's Mary. In second place with 11 points, it's Debbie. And in the lead with 13 points, it's Kirby.
Voice.
Actually, I'm going to check that.
Yeah, check that.
Nope,
how
I'm right.
I go from last to first?
Nope, that's right. That's
you
correct.
You answered most of the questions right.
Yeah, right, Mary, your question.
The usual way.
Mary.
I'm a boring way.
Mary.
Yeah.
Right. What did Scarman call the mummy robots?
Oh. slaves?
Anybody?
I have a joke, but I'm not going to say
no,
the
you're
joke.
Not going to tell that dude. No, not any jokes. Thank you very much. God. Longest 30 seconds of my...
robot? I don't know.
Eventually.
What?
He called them services. Service robots is good enough for me. Services.
Okay. My joke was going to say Fred.
Right. Whose question was that for originally? Mary, wasn't it?
It was me.
That's right. So Kirby.
Master.
How did Sarah stop herself from being strangled by the mummy?
Like I said earlier,
there we go.
The ring. That means ring.
I nearly only gave you a point then for trying to being ridiculously pedantic. Yeah, I said earlier.
That's my job. That's what you.
No, it's not. Just answer the blimmy questions, Debbie.
Yeah.
Which barrier did the doctor manage to deactivate?
I know.
I think it's the east barrier. Yeah!
Right, there's 1 point in the bonus pot. And it is for this question. What exactly could one good sneeze set off?
The Jellignite.
I know. Yeah.
I want the proper name for it. Thank you very much.
The sweaty Jellignite.
Jellignite.
Yes, that's correct. Right, so the points, scores are in last place with 10 points, Mary, and joint leaders with 15 points each, it's Kirby and Debbie. Next question goes to Mary. When the Doctor When the Doctor is first disguised as the mummy, she responds with, must have been a terrible accent. What did the Doctor say?
Well, you mean must have been a terrible accident? That was my quote from last time.
This is to do with, which is what Sarah says. I'll start it again, right? When the Doctor is first disguised as the mummy, Sarah responds with, must have been a terrible accident.
Nasty accident.
Yeah, I wrote that down completely wrong. I'm doing a...
So you're saying...
All right, nasty, right. Point deducted for Debbie for being overly pedantic with the actual line. And...
Wait.
I wrote these questions about 4 years ago. Right, so do you want to do that again? And people are interrupting. I'm going to give Mary the points because people are interrupting. There you go. I'll go through the question properly. The question is... right, none appropriate points deducted from Debbie for not allowing me to read the...
Mary might have known that. He hadn't had a
not allowing me to read the question. Right, then.
Well, what I want to know is it what he says that makes her say that, or is it what he says afterwards?
Let me read the question out. Right. When the Doctor is first disguised as the mummy, Sarah responds with, must have been a terrible accident. Don't care what it actually says. That's what I've got written in front of here. What does the Doctor say in response to her saying, must have been a terrible accident? Accident.
Okay, I don't know what he says after she says that, no.
Debbie actually did say the answer. That's why she got points deducted. It wasn't her question, it was yours. It was, don't provoke me. So points deducted for Debbie and points for you for people being very mean to you, Mary. That's what I point out. Right.
I was not being mean.
Kirby. That's what made me laugh. It's not in fitting with my character. shut up. Kirby, what is the significance of the numbers 10 0 11 00 by 02?
I know
that's the binary location of Gallifrey from Galactic Zero Center.
Of course he would know.
Beg your pardon, Mary?
You said of course he would know.
Oh dear, I just put it on the wrong bloody person. I gave it to Debbie by mistake. Right, so that's 17 points. Oh good lord. And then, right, so that was that your question, Kirby? I've lost the plot here. Thanks
yes,
to you.
Yes, it was.
Right, Debbie.
Yes.
Why can't Scarman fly the TARDIS?
I know.
I think it's just because it's isomorphic.
Eventually.
That's fine.
All right. So the scores. In last place with 12 points, it's Mary. In second place with 15 points, it's Debbie. And in the lead with 17 points, it's Kirby. Right, Mary.
Yes.
How did the Doctor survive the attack by the mummy?
Using his respiratory bypass system.
Being a nurse, it doesn't surprise me you knew that answer.
It was useful in a tight squeeze.
Kirby.
Master.
What did that Sarah say when the Doctor opened the first invisible door?
Oh, I think they know.
I don't.
Right, hang on, just 1 point into the bonus pot. Mary?
Time Lord Physics?
I'm going to give you that. It's not. I know it would have sounded like Time Lord Physics, but I think it may have been, but I got written down Tribo Physics, so I'm going to give you that one because I think that's probably phonetically correct. Nobody's objecting, so I'm going to go with that one. Right, Debbie.
Go for it.
Debbie!
Yeah?
What did the puzzle on the door remind Sarah of?
Oh bloody hell, we've been talking about this.
Yes, we have, haven't we? Yes.
City of Excellence.
Oh.
It is actually tribophysics that they say, because I wrote that down.
Okay, but it could have sounded like Time Lorders. Are you denying Mary the points like that I gave her?
It does, the way she says it does sound, but it is tribophysics.
Okay, that's a sign, but are you saying I should take the points away from Mary?
No, I'm just telling you.
That's good, because you know what would have happened if you had said yes to that, wouldn't you?
No, points have been given, that's it,
haven't you? I'm stuck. Right, 1 point in the bonus spot. Hello? Anybody there?
Yes.
Oh, good, right. bonus spot question is, what did the Doctor write in reverse on the tube Sarah was trapped in?
Relax.
Debbie, got
relax.
That one?
As I come in last.
Right, next question goes to Mary. Which of the two switches released Sarah, the left one or the right one?
The left one.
Right, Kirby.
You know, 4 years ago, I wrote down exactly the same thing, Time Lord Physics.
Oh.
I just wonder if anybody saw the, like the, what is it, the text at the bottom? Because I don't get to see that. I just have to hear
things. No, I didn't really look at
Do you know what it really is?
I don't know what it is.
I didn't watch it with that this time.
Mm. Well, that's unusual for you, Kirby.
Yeah, I know.
Mm. Right, Kirby.
I've seen it so many times I don't need subtitles.
Kirby.
Master?
How long did Sutek try to tempt the Doctor into releasing him? I'll tell you that's how, not how long. How did Sutek try to tempt the Doctor into releasing him?
Oh, he was going to give him the Earth as a plaything.
Yeah.
Debbie.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't remember
it. All right, thank you for that. Thank you for that. Debbie.
Yep.
Who directed Pyramids of Mars?
Paddy Russell.
Right, two questions left. So, it's a free-for-all, these ones. Okay, do you understand, everybody, what a free-for-all question is?
What should we say?
Chip in. Just go.
Just go, yeah. And the points are, in last place with 17 points, Mary. In second place with 19 points, Kirby. And then the lead with 20 points, Debbie. Free-for-all question number one. Who wrote the incidental music?
Dudley Simpson.
Free-for-all question number two. Who played Sutek?
Gabriel Wolf.
Oh, and you did a wolf impression just after as well. Very cute. Well, that makes it very awkward. Right then, and the points then. In joint second place with 19 points each, it's Mary and Kirby. In the lead, or the winning at the moment, is Debbie with 22. Uh-oh, indeed.
Uh-oh.
Oh, and I just knocked my speakers, and that's given me a bit of a headache. Right then, Mary predicted Debbie to win. All right. She also predicted herself to be last. Yeah, work it out. Everybody else is working it out with me alongside. Kirby predicted Debbie to win.
Yep.
And Mary to be last. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Debbie predicted Kirby to win.
Yeah.
And Mary to be last. Right, so... Oh, good grief. This is very, very awkward. In last place with 44 points is Debbie, but the joint leaders, and wow. I can't be bothered to turn it into anything else but a tie, is Mary and Kirby with 76 points each.
Wow. I've never had that.
Right, back to the live feed with the Garm sat in the corner, his normal spot, and we've got his missus sat right down here. You just see a little lump of, looks like a tribble poking up the top of the bottom of the screen here. Anybody see the little tribble here? Nobody's looking. But anyway, oh, now it's moving again. There's a tribble there.
I'm not watching.
That's my tribble impression. Lillian Robin says, this is fun to watch live. Lillian obviously haven't watched much other things on TV, but thank you for watching, Lillian. And Alan T. Butcher says, the Garm is doing a fine job today. He's just sitting there because he knows once his show's out of the window, he'll be out the door having his walk around the block poo, which is what he tends to do. And then Laurie Nick says, yowza. Anyway, welcome Lillian Robin to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join. Right, so let's move on.
Alan T. Butcher also wrote, Debbie did very well indeed today. It was vocabularically less exact.
Don't inflate a head any bigger than easy, Whitey. Thank you very much.
You know what's going to happen next week, don't you?
What's going to happen next week?
Yeah.
What's happening next week then, Deb? Apart from the fact there's no show next week.
All right, then the week after.
All right, then the week after. Everybody's being horrible to me today. I'm going to make notice of this, you know. Right then. Doctor Who news. Oh, God.
I need to warn you guys, don't predict me to win next week.
Oh, here we go.
Because I've never seen the story.
Oh, dear.
Are any of you going to fall
for that load of nonsense?
That's such a handicap.
Yeah.
I haven't.
Such
I don't
a
get,
handicap. I great bit of sarcasm there from Mary. Okay. Doctor Who news. Doctor Who, the 10th Doctor, Year 3, Episode 14. Load of comics, by the looks of things, coming out. If you like the 10th Doctor in comic form. Matt Smith selects his Desert Island discs. 11th Doctor Matt Smith has appeared on the long-running BBC radio programme Desert Island Discs, choosing the music he would take to a desert island. I'd rather take food, to be fair, to a desert island than a load of records. In the programme, which can be heard here, if I click on this particular link, you'll actually be able to hear the programme, that'd be quite good. He talked about how he nearly turned down the role of the 11th Doctor. He said he had a wobble after being told he'd be David Tennant's successor, and after seeing Tennant's face on a set of plates, but described playing the role as one of the greatest experiences of his life. He described the casting of Jodie Whittaker as the 13th Doctor as a brilliant choice. Right, Bedford Charity Confor, Bedford Who Charity Confor is offering readers of Doctor Who News a 10% discount off tickets for the charity event. The event takes place on the 7th of April with a mixture of panel interviews, signings and photos and sessions. Where is it though? Bedford, I suppose. It's in Britain. That's all right. Here we go. Anybody want to go to that? And everyone has gone quiet. The guests this year, Colin Baker, Sophie Aldred, John Leeson, Angela Douglas, Ellen Thomas, Mike Tucker. Okay, normal price of tickets is £42.50 for adults, £22.50 to 14 to 16-year-olds, and £15 for under-14s. You go, Deb, and go to that, if you like, that one if you like.
I'd like to, but I can't really afford much at the moment.
Who Against Guns? A group of Doctor Who fans have got together to raise money for organisations committed to ending gun violence. Using the hashtag Who Against Guns. Send that one to Donald Trump then, shall we? Roger Delgado, born 100 years ago today. Sad.
100 years ago on the 1st of March.
Oh, shut up. Right. Peter Miles has passed away, and we've only just watched him in Genesis and the Daleks. He was 89 years old, a sad passing. Apparently a very nice chap, actually. He always used to play villains in the various, quite a long list of programmes got down here. Armchair Theatre, Softly Softly, Dixon of Doc Green, Paul Temple, Cold It's Better, Moonbase 3, Within These Walls, New Scotland Yard, Survivors, Poldark, The Eagle Has Landed, Zed Cars, Warship, Disraeli, Portrait of Romantic, Blake Seven, and Bergerac.
He's got that chiseled kind of face that lends itself to, you know, ruthless.
He has, but when he was being his normal self, because he's on quite a few Doctor Who sort of extra bits on DVDs, yes. He's always smiling. He doesn't look anything like Peter Miles. It's just his character never smiled in Doctor Who.
He looks like Peter Miles. He doesn't look anything like Guider.
Exactly. It's basically got a resting bitch face. Or he did have, bless him, when he was still with us. But it's a sad passing. Peter Miles, what a legend in the world of Doctor Who and British TV in general, really. Black Archive announces new range editor. Don't know what that's all about.
Is it raining?
I beg your pardon, Debbie?
I think it just started raining. It's really loud.
Okay, well, does that really matter?
Yes!
Dog out for a poop.
Oh, God, yeah, that's a point. Oh, dear. Doctor Who Experience leaves Cardiff. Oh, we've done that one. That's last week. We'll forget that one.
Yeah.
Right, then. So we're going to move on to whowon.co.uk.
Is that
whowon.co.uk? It was last time I looked, yeah. Doctor Who Special Science and Technology, which is a book, which is written by Marcus Hearn, possibly.
Marcus!
£9.99, it's a paperback. Crossfire 2, Blake Seven's story. Missy Chronicles, which is another book by James Goss et al. Dot 2 Magazine 521 and 522.
What's Al's last name?
And Shush. And the third, Doctor Third, the Mr. Van books, all available to buy. Coming soon, we've got Aliens Among Us 3, Ark, which is the audio book of, and it's got a cover that's very much like a bit of Alistair Pearson artwork on it. Days She Saved the Doctor, which is, looks like a book, hardback book. Don't know what that is. Maybe it's some, I'm going to click on that one because it looks like a bit of fan fiction, maybe, I don't know. So it's like a novel of some variety. Diary of Riversong 3, Enemy of the World Special Edition, which we were discussing a while back. Might get that. £18.99. I might get that later. And Ghost Walk, which is a big Finnish story featuring the Fifth Doctor. And Serpent in the Silver Mask, big Finnish story starring the Fifth Doctor. Then the 10th Doctor Cold Vengeance, which is a big Finnish story. And the 10th Doctor Infamy of Zaros, another 10th Doctor story on big Finnish. And the 10th Doctor Sword of Chevalier. So cool, it's so exciting seeing these 10th Doctor That's stories it. Coming up on big Finnish. What?
You were wondering about this, that book, The Day She Saved the Doctor.
Yes.
It's four stories, four adventures. With the Doctors, starring one stars Rose, one with Sarah Jane, one with Clara, and one with Bill.
Cool.
It publishes on International Women's Day.
Oh, lovely. Excellent. Well done, Kirby. You get a point for that, even though it's too late. Right. So, Lavazzi have got some scarves on offer.
Yay!
And some hats and some jumpers and some really good cosplay for the Seventh Doctor. We also have some Star Trek items, scarves, brollies and more scarves, particularly good for this time of year if you're living in Great Britain. Sherlock items, Sherlock scarf, Sherlock bobble hat, or beanie hat, sorry, with a pom-pom on it, and Sherlock umbrella, which is sold out, sadly. So those are the specific items that are related to Doctor Who, Star Trek and Sherlock, but you can, of course, buy standard garments that aren't cosplay, science fiction, geek or nerd related. So there you go. What I would like to see at a convention that I go to is one of the stars of the Big Bang Theory, but I don't think that's going to happen now. Well, there you go. Right, so that's essentially it. Pardon?
Alan T. Butcher has submitted that Big Finish have their Gallifrey series all out on download now.
Cool.
Yep.
I've been listening from the start. Very good. A closely studied political intrigue inspired by classical and modern influences.
Does sound really good. Also, I say the 10th Doctor Big Finish stuff, I'm quite intrigued to see what they're like. I don't think I'm going to find out because I haven't got time to listen to them, but I'm quite excited when I do get a chance to listen to them. It's like all the Fourth Doctor stuff I haven't listened to yet on Big Finish. I've got one in the car that I haven't played yet, actually, come to think of it, which I bought when I was away. Actually listened to it yet. There you go.
Ooh, something's going funny with your feed.
Oops. No, it's all right. Only at your end. Right, so next week we are not recording dear listeners and watchers on the Facebook thingy because I'm doing a photo shoot. So the week after that, I believe it's Android Invasion, which is going to be quite a good one to talk about because some of you haven't seen it before.
I haven't, but I put it on DVD.
I haven't. Who hasn't?
Yeah, hands up. I have it on DVD. I've just never seen it.
Hands up who hasn't seen it.
Me.
I haven't seen it.
They say hands up and they go, right, slowly,
well,
right.
You can't see our hands.
That's right. Kirby, have you seen it?
No.
Mary, have you seen it?
No.
Debbie, have you seen it?
No.
Well, there you go then. You're going to be all excited for seeing essentially New Who for yourselves.
I know the big joke that I've mentioned before. But
oh, good grief. No spoilers. Right then. So
I'm not going to say in here.
In 2 weeks' time. Might even have Andy back. There might not be any rugby on. You never know. And I bet the game he went to was rubbish too. Pardon?
The 18th.
Oh, I think if that's what the date is in 2 weeks' time, then yes, that would be right, Kirby.
Yes, it's the 18th. Yes. And our clocks will have changed as well then by then.
No. Ours will change for the next week.
Yeah,
Kirby's right. The clocks change on the 25th of March.
Right.
Yeah. Bad luck, Debbie.
Mary,
that were yours then.
Debbie?
Yeah, Mary, so that means that we have to be careful because ours is changed.
Don't deduct a point from me for being an idiot. Come on.
Excellent stuff.
So
right,
what,
then.
We have to sign on at one?
Do we? Discuss this afterwards.
I'll
anyway,
figure it out.
Yeah, figure it out. All the listeners, the viewer listeners need to do.
No, we'll be signing on at
ones in America at the same time in 2 weeks' time. Shut up talking over me. But we'll sort the other time differences out at a later date. So, like I say, Enron Invasion next time. Thank you for listening to the show, and thank you for entertaining me, you other presenters on the show, and thank you basically for being absolutely rubbish and naughty. But until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
The Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.